WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. In our first segment, we talked about how to deal with pets as some people return to the office. But what happens when taking care of an animal is your job, and you're doing this job illegally? That's the subject of Kelly Reichardt's latest film, First Cow. Based on Jonathan Raymond's 2004 novel, The Half-Life, the film First Cow follows a young man named Cookie Figowitz, a fur trapper on the Oregon Trail. When Cookie meets a man on the run, King Lou, the two start a business together, which involves illegally milking a powerful businessman's cow to make desserts and make enough money to start their own ventures. Rolling Stone called the film a, quote, quietly profound tale of two enterprising men, a cow, a crime, and a nation on the verge of change. As of today, First Cow is available to purchase digitally on all platforms, and it'll be available to on demand starting July 21st. When I spoke with director Kelly Reichardt and actors John Magaro and Orion Lee, I started by asking her how she became interested in making films about the American West.
I'm from Miami, Florida, so it's quite odd.
Yeah.
A lot of it had to do with meeting writer Jonathan Raymond, who mm-hmm. is located in Oregon. And the first thing I ever read by him was The Half-Life. And I wrote him and asked him if he had any short stories, which led to us making our first film together, which was Old Joy. And really, it's been a lot about that. But I also made a Western with some Miley Malloy stories in Montana. So I live in New York City. It's nice to get away and shoot from where you don't live and go off like on an adventure a little bit off the grid with with the people I make films with. So
I think it's also when you go to some place where there's that much open space, something happens to you creatively. I don't know what it is. I had to work in Montana for a little while, and I was like, you just kind of think about things a little differently. I'm not sure why.
Well, I think Montana, I felt, was different because it was, I'm usually on a coast, and it was weird being surrounded by mountains all the time. And I thought, wow, this does make this is a different mindset. And as opposed to being in an open desert, Oregon's a really diverse state with a old growth forest and a ocean and a desert. And so we've made a lot of that state.
You filmed this film there, right?
Yeah, we did.
And how long did it take to film?
30 days, I think, of shooting, something like that. It was a little bit more spread out this time. This was the first time I ever got to shoot 5-day weeks, which was made a huge difference not to be shooting every day. There was time to actually think a little bit while we were making the film, which that's never happened before.
John, you play Cookie, who's I think he's a gentle guy, sort of a soft-spoken guy. When you were thinking about creating him, how did you think about him?
It's pretty evident, I think, just from reading it, that Cookie is a gentle soul. He's a fish out of water. He's come from a place into a world that's totally alien to him, a violent world, and he is not somebody who is violent, necessarily. He's experienced a lot of loss and a lot of pain, doesn't really have many connections in his life, which is probably one of the reasons he has ventured into this territory. So that's a great foundation to just enter it from that, you know, you hear the voice and you hear the rhythms of him. And then also just the idea of him being a cook. You gave me a great book of recipes from the era, from Lewis and Clark recipes and just other recipes from that time period. And I enjoy cooking in general, mm-hmm. but that style of cooking, especially stews and things like that, there's a tremendous amount of patience that goes into that. And I think in that world, patience is much more plentiful than it is nowadays. But also for cooking in general, patience and time and temper is something that he's just endowed with.
I'm interested in the cookbooks.
Oh, they're great.
How to cook squirrel.
Yeah.
How to cook beaver.
Yeah. There's one, one of the really great ones was, I'm sorry, I'm going to say the name wrong, but it's something like Lewis and Clark cookbook, basically, and it's just recipes inspired by what they had, the provisions they had. You also gave me a great mushroom foraging book.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
It's interesting that you can sort of transport yourself through a cookbook.
I think you can. I mean, food is a very, it's a very social thing. It bonds entire societies and cultures.
Yeah, it's cultural.
It's cultural. It inspires a region. I mean, the region of the Oregon Territory in 1820 has a very specific cook palette and amount of resources. I mean, Scott Shepherd, one of the actors in this, has a great line. He says, I'm done with eating salmon. I can't eat any more salmon because, you know, that was abundant. So it really influences and sort of teaches you about a place and time.
All right, so we know Cookie is gentle. We've got Cookie, the sense of how John got to Cookie. King Louis, he's, there's some fire in him at first. You know, we sort of like, oh, he's this sort of person who is being pursued, but then it quickly becomes apparent that there's something motivating him inside. What is it?
Ooh. I think for me, when I first got the script, I really responded to, I felt the similarities between King Lou and Cookie. And then after having conversations with Kelly, I realized that she wanted someone who's quite different. And I was just trying to figure out how, because I think similarities attract, not opposites don't attract. It's more similarities that attract. So I was trying to find that, you know, that softness, and then what's happened to King Lou that over time, now at the point at which we find him, he's living on his wits and is charming and is a bit of a salesman, potentially a con artist, you know. And I was thinking of what's that thing? The line from Shrek where it says like humans are like onions. I think where the core is still that person, but then as time has gone by and the situations that he's gone through, he's needed to become a salesman, and so that's what he is now. Like he doesn't think of it as anything different. But when he meets Cookie, they kind of have. They're I don't know whether it's conscious or not, but I think it's like their hearts know each other or recognize each other, and that's where the connection comes from. In terms of history, I did a bit of my own, besides all the research which John's mentioned, I did a bit of my own research about China during that time period, which was also kind of the opium trade time as well. So that went into my backstory as well.
My guests are Kelly Reichardt, John Magaro, and Orion Lee. We're talking about the film First Cow. I saw the preview for this about 3 weeks ago. I went to see Little Women at the Angelica. And when it first came out, I was like, what is this film about? It was just, I was like, it's about a cow, but it's not about a cow. But the cow's important in the film.
Sure.
How do you cast a cow? Sort of a silly question.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It actually is a whole casting process for the cow. You know, I got headshots of cows, and then we had cow videos. Mm-hmm. Decided on the Jersey cow because of the size and their beautiful eyes. Mm-hmm. And then we found Evie, the animal wranglers on the film found her and started training her to be able to get, like, we float her down the Columbia River and cows don't swim, so she had to sort of become comfortable on this ferry we had built for her. And so she's pretty significant, I think, for John's character. He's sort of, you know, this down to the earth low, he's always like foraging and on the ground and getting this milk the nurturer from the cow, and as where King Lou is sort of has the is up in the tree and has his sort of like the owl in our movie, this kind of bird's eye view of things, and is a bigger objective than Cookie has, which is a little bit more homespun. So, and also I think the cow, this the question, one of the questions in the film, I think, is between, you know, the natural world versus mm-hmm. capitalism. It's the beginning of capitalism, and if these two things can work together. One of the things Toby Joan talks about, you know, it's a beaver trade time, and, you know, like, the beaver is forever, which it wasn't, of course. And so all those things seem sort of relevant now to his questions, yeah.
Let's take a listen to a clip. This is where we actually get to get a sense of Cookie's gentleness. With he has kind of develops a relationship with this cow, but he uses to make these almost like scones. They're like these
oily
delicious
cakes.
Yeah, this delicious.
Like basic. I can almost compare them to a beignet or like a donut.
Okay.
Like a version of that, an early version of that.
Let's take a listen to a clip from First Cow.
Sorry about your husband. I heard he didn't make it all the way. And your calf. It's a terrible thing. Terrible. But you got a nice place here. You do. You got a real nice little place here, don't you?
I'm interested in what was the direction in that scene. You're having to milk a cow, you're talking to this cow, and just expressing yourself, we all just heard. What were some of the conversations you had about that scene?
With the cow?
With Kelly,
right.
About the cow.
I mean, sort of the thing about working with animals is that, you know, the direction stops. You have to deal with this live being, and mm-hmm. it's... And I think, in a way, the acting stuff, like, you have to milk a cow, so it's all just, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I didn't find it any, especially when it was on me, coverage, I didn't find it any really different than anything else we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You allow for an honesty mm-hmm. and just a presence, just being there, living in the moment, letting the words take you on the journey that they take you on. It's a beautiful language. So if anything, it helps put you at ease because you're there with this cow, and Evie was so wonderful. They could have just let her be. It's almost when we interfered with her, the trouble started. She was just so.
Yeah, it's like the thing of, you know, it's almost like you have to train the crew to be around the cow. Just like we have mm-hmm. to all be quiet and slow down and not work at our. Not bring all our hectic energy close to her,
right?
So that John could
milk
a cow.
Yeah, just sat there and chat.
Because you can't direct a cow.
You just sit there and chat,
really can't.
And it's like talking to your shrink.
I'm so glad I didn't notice any of this because I was up in the tree. Because otherwise, King Lou would have been very, very jealous.
Tell me why. Tell it.
I mean, it's so lovely, the relationship that you have with the cow. And you speak more to that cow than you ever speak to King Lou.
But it's that relationship with the cow that, let's say, tips off someone that there might be some illegal activity going on.
Mm.
That is just one of the most subtle scenes in the film, is that the cow clearly shows affection towards your character, and people start to notice that. Orion, I'm curious, when you were working with Kelly, what's a piece of advice or a piece of direction she gave you which turned out to be really, really helpful?
So many. Every note from her was gold dust on my performance. And I mean that seriously. You know, one of the things that she said early on was, she said, you know, look, Orion, in this process, you know, I know in some other cases, actors have the responsibility to tell the story. I want you to know that I will take on that responsibility and you can just be.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just exist in the space. And that she said also the respect that she has for her audience. She likes to exist in that sort of can be a bit uncomfortable, that space where you, where she doesn't know whether the story has been told or not. It just reminded me of a thing I heard by a voice teacher who was just saying, you know, talk halfway to the audience, let the audience come halfway to you in their listening. And that was said to me very early on, and it was sort of a guidepost by which I did my performance.
I was interested in the costuming. The costuming was pretty great.
Yeah, that was April Napier who did the costumes. It was like putting everyone into a little machine, and they'd a little time machine, and they'd come out of her space looking, you know, you would look at someone and say, oh my God, I cast them, how's this going to work? And then they go into April's machine and they come out and you're like, oh, well, of course. So we worked with a confederation of tribes down in southern Oregon called the Grand Ronde, and they had just opened a museum there, and they had a little library, and they were first, you know, kind of like at arm's length with us, and but we kept not going away, and they were really helpful with the language, but also with the, they led April to a woman who made the cedar capes and hats that still is, could weave those capes in the for the film, which is great. Then we were able to like donate them back to the museum for their educational purposes. Yeah, there was a lot of they ended up lending us their canoe, which was pretty amazing, like right out of their museum. And yeah, so all the worlds were kind of with language and costume. Like April would meet someone that gave us a tip to something else we needed, or our props guys would find out something that would be helpful. It was a
Sounds really collaborative.
It's very collaborative. And we made all these new friends that down in the Grand Ronde too. I mean, it's quite beautiful thing seeing these guys come, and it takes about 10 guys to carry that canoe, and they just who came from the Grand Ronde with this dugout and carried it down the mountain for us, and it was really pretty special. Yeah,
I think it's really important for people to understand the way that Kelly makes a film, and she's been doing this for years now in Oregon, in the Northwest. She has created a family there that sustains a lot of local artists and people who are from the region. A lot of her crew was from the region. And it, like you said, it's extremely collaborative. It's a place for artists to really feel comfortable and free to kind of stretch themselves, and I imagine that's why our First Nation friends who came and helped us on this job were so, although they were at first a little apprehensive, I think that's why they warmed up to it.
Orion, what's something working on this film, First Cow, that's different than any other film you've worked on? What was different about this experience?
I was just struck by, again, John just said, it's this sort of family atmosphere, really. Throughout my life, I've tried to work with what I call good and able people. Good being like nice, warm-hearted, and able as in like they have ability. And it was just fantastic to work with just a whole team of people working at that level. They're really nice, they're very warm, and they've got such great ability, you know, production design, hair, makeup, you know, all the actors, and you know, every actor in the world should be so lucky to work with Kelly. And yeah, it was just like a dream job, really.
How about for you, John? What was something that was unique about this particular experience on First Cow?
That I got to do a Western. I mean, that's what goes to kind of Kelly's bravery. You know, I know what I look like, guys. I'm not, you know, like the typical Western guy. But, you know, Kelly saw something about the West that a lot of other people might be afraid to see, is that at that time it was a diverse place. It wasn't the West as we know it. I mean, this is a world that's, you know, a proto-West kind of. So she really infused it with all sorts of cultures and all sorts of different types of people and all different sounds and all different languages and looks. So to get to step into that world was an extreme joy, as well as the, you know, just being a part of this film and this familial atmosphere and this tale, and, you know, there was a lot of good things about it.
All right, my last question for you, Kelly, is there's always something in whatever you make that you just, this moment you love, like whether it's a film or a book you've written or something, what is just this moment that you'd love people to, that you love, that you want to make sure people are aware of? It could be something simple, it could be a glance, it could be a costume, it could be...
Well, I guess, you know, the time of these guys in the hutch, it's raining, and King Lou's sewing his slippers. I guess the setup, like from your, when I'm first building my books, of what I think that might look like, and then Tony Gasparo and the art team actually built the hutch, and then here these guys are in April's costumes. It's all coming together, and seeing it, I guess that night, I really love that night. I did that scene on one of the down days. Chris Carroll, the assistant director, and Chris Blauvelt, our fabulous cinematographer, were playing the parts of these guys, and so that I could see how this. So we had a nice day in the hutch, the three of us, which we often do, go to a place, the three of us, and then, you know, you see it finished. So it's, you've seen it through all these stages. You know, to me, that's it's really fun seeing something come out at the end.
Was my conversation with director Kelly Reichardt and actors John Magaro and Orion Lee from First Cow. First Cow is available on digital platforms starting today and on demand starting July 21st.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink. Drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.